All right, we're back on. Pat here with another Pat tonight. Pat Farmer has joined us on the podcast this week, and I'm actually pretty pumped to have Pat here. So, welcome.
Well, I'm pumped to be here as well, here in the running room.
Thanks, Pat.
It's fantastic. I was lucky enough to see a session that you guys ran just earlier on with some specialized workouts for runners. It was fantastic to watch.
Friday night strength session.
Very good.
It's good. I don't really have many running heroes, but Pat's someone I've kind of like looked up to a little bit over the last few years. You've got a hell of a history, and I'm going to get you to give us your 3-minute history, your 3-minute running career. I'm going to get you to do that.
Okay.
And I think it was my third ever marathon. Was the Blackmores Sydney Marathon, and you were pacing for 3:30. And I was running about 3:30 as well. And coming down the finishing chute, I was about 2 meters ahead of you. And everyone in the crowd recognized you, and everyone was shouting, "Go, Pat, go, Pat." I'm running down the finishing chute, and I think everyone's cheering for me, and I'm loving life. I've just hit my sub 3:30 marathon, but being paced by you.
Well, for what it's worth, I think they were yelling, "Go, Pat," to Pat Carroll, who was doing the announcing at the end of it all. So I think we both bombed out there.
Easy announcer, you're running, I'm there. It was good. So that was a few years back. So, Pat, I guess a lot of anyone who kind of is half interested in running in Australia would know who you are, even people who don't run. Like, my parents know exactly who you are. So give us your 3 or 4 minute running career synopsis.
Well, look, I think
something that could be done over 3 hours.
I think the most important thing about me is the fact that I wasn't a runner, but I was inspired by the actions of runners. That's the most important thing, because you don't realize what effect you have on other people by just getting out there and getting on with the job and just doing your thing. And that could be your Saturday morning run, it could be your weekly runs, or it could be in a competition. But people are standing on the sideline and they see other people clapping and cheering for you, or they see you going through your paces, and they figure, that looks great, especially when sometimes some runners make it look so effortless and other times it looks so painful.
Yeah.
But
they're both inspiring, right?
But nevertheless, they're absolutely inspiring. So, with that in mind, I was inspired by Cliff Young in the early days, the Sydney to Melbourne race. I saw Cliff Young run past where I worked as an apprentice motor mechanic.
Yeah.
And I was just craving trying to be somebody. I just wanted to make something of my life, be recognised by somebody. You see these people on TV and everyone's clapping and cheering they're somebody, they're a name. And I suppose all of us want to be somebody to someone.
Yeah.
So I thought, if that little old guy can run from Sydney to Melbourne almost 1,000 kilometres in what was considered in those days as the toughest foot race on earth, if he can do that at the age of 63, surely I can do it.
And he won.
Well, he won as well. And that's why he was an inspiration to a nation. And I think people that are ordinary people that do extraordinary things are far more inspirational than those ones that are born with a silver spoon in their mouth or they've had everything their favourite. They've gone through the Institute of Sport and they've trained like demons and they've got all this money thrown at them and they've got to where they are. Sure, they're good, but that's it. But when you see somebody come out of the darkness and they're just
the everyday
they're
person.
Just Joe Blow, they do something phenomenal, I think that's amazing. And so, Cliff was that to all of us.
Yeah.
So nobody could turn around and say, I'm too old, or I'm too young, or I'm too fat, or I'm too skinny, or I'm too this, or I'm too that. They just went, geez, if he can do that, then I better get off my back so I can get out there and do something.
Bloke in his 60s won the Sydney to Melbourne race.
Yeah. So that was the inspiration for me. And then from there I went, competed in 4 Sydney to Melbourne races and bettered my position each time.
So how did you go from not running to then deciding to run Sydney to Melbourne, rather than saying, I'll do a half marathon like most people would?
Well, I didn't even know what a half marathon was. I knew absolutely nothing about running. And I'll qualify that by saying, I'll never forget, I was doing my first ever run, which was a qualifier for the Sydney to Melbourne race, which was 24-hour run around Henley Oval here at Botany, around the athletic track there, and I had a hamburger and a can of Coke after 5 hours running because I didn't know that you were supposed to eat or drink while you were running. And then I ended up having something like that because I knew nothing about goos or about, you know, about carbohydrate drinks or about isotonic drinks.
So really nothing.
I knew nothing at all because I was sick as a dog. But I finished the event. And one of the things that I feel proud of is every single thing I've ever started in my life, I've always finished.
Really?
And I'll never forget Cliff Young saying to me in later years when I qualified for the Sydney to Melbourne race, he said, "Pat, you know, in order to win a race, you have to finish a race." And by that, what he meant was a whole lot of people with big reputations go into an event, and if they're fallen behind in the field and they don't look like they can win, those injuries get bigger, larger than life, and they end up pulling out of the event.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love the novice because the novice is there to finish for their own self, not for the gold medal or the praise of the audience, but they're there to finish for themselves. And so they're out there and they push through all the pain barriers, they push through all the anguish and all the mental torment, and they finish what they've started.
Yeah. And that person finishing hours behind first place is probably more of an achievement than the professional athlete winning the race.
Well, you listen to Rob DiCostello. Rob's a wonderful man and a great friend. And Rob often says that. He says, you know, he says, yeah, I run a marathon just over 2 hours, you know, a bit over 2 hours. But the point of the matter is it's just as difficult, just as hard for those people that are finishing in 3 or 4 or 5 hours, you know, because we're all just trying to run our best.
Yeah.
And we're all working as hard as we possibly can. And that's the wonderful thing about running.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So tell us about some of the big international, big, proper, big runs you've done.
Well, I did a race across America, the Trans-American Foot Race, which was very famous. It's 64 days, 80K a day from Huntington Beach, California to Central Park, New York. And we go up over the mountains there in Colorado. So
basically what Forrest
Gump did. Bit of altitude. Yeah, but I did it before Forrest Gump. I'll never forget, I ran that in 1991 because the Westfield Run was finishing up. And I was looking for a new challenge, something to do next. And I saw this race across America had been rekindled.
Yeah.
Previously to that was on in 1928, 1929.
Right.
And it was called the Bunyan Derby back in those days. And there was a book written about it called Flanagan's Run by Tom McNabb. Anyway, so these guys kicked it off again in later times. And I decided, yeah, I'm going to go to the States. I'm going to run in this race. And I had no support crew. I had no sponsorship, nothing. Yeah. But I just wanted to pursue this dream of running. And I thought how amazing it would be to run across America.
It's incredible.
So I got in that race, and I finished second in the race that year as a result of it, against 30 of the best runners from all over the world there.
Yeah.
You know, so it was an amazing event. But, you know, it was 80K a day. No days off, and we would all start at the same time every morning, and our times would be accumulated. So until you got through to Central Park, so which was the finish line, 64 days later.
Wow.
So it was a hell of a run. But I've run, Lebanon, Jordan, Israel, Palestine. I've run the length of Vietnam for clean water projects
and these are all fun races, mind you.
I discovered a while ago that I had the ability to run long distances.
Yeah.
And two, that because I was feeling so much pain and anguish, I needed a good purpose to be able to complete these journeys.
Yeah.
So I found purpose in supporting others less fortunate than myself. And so I realized that I could raise money for worthwhile causes through my running because of the media attention that I would attract.
Yeah.
So I started doing that, and literally I've raised millions of dollars for different causes. Everyone from Lifeline to Father Chris Riley's Youth Off the Streets to Diabetes Australia to you name it, to Red Cross and so many others, Cancer Council, Heart Foundation, all sorts of different organizations. So as a result, I've had the chance to experience cultures in different parts of the world. I've run with different people from all over the world, inspired some people, been inspired by others myself, and, I met some great comrades in various races around the world, you know. So it's sensational. I've run in the coldest parts of the world, you know. I was dropped off by Russian helicopter in the North Pole.
Yeah.
When I did that, when I did that run from the North Pole to the South Pole, I was looking at trying to do something that nobody else has ever done before.
Yeah, so this is a book that I've got sitting in my bookcase at home. It's called Pole to Pole,
which is the story
of you running North to South Pole through essentially North Pole, North America, Central America, South America, down to the South Pole.
That's correct, yeah.
And it's an epic read. If anyone's got the opportunity to read Pole to Pole, it's a good book.
Well, let me tell you, there's so many more stories to all of that. But, you know, I had this deal with Alan and Unwin, the book publishers at the time. They said, you have to write a page every day. It seemed like, oh, that's easy enough to do. But you know what? When you're absolutely wiped out at the end of a day and you haven't got an ounce of energy left in your body, it is so hard to try and collect your thoughts and try and write a page about what you've just done that day.
I call that ultra brain.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll never forget one day I was up in the North Pole. I'd finished the end of my journey that day. The wind had been blowing 100k an hour. Headwinds, you know, you talk about headwinds, you got to go to polar regions to really know what a headwind is.
Yeah.
And then you've got the cold maximized through it as well. And sometimes blizzard conditions and total whiteouts. And then I finally set up my tent. I get inside my tent. I get inside my sleeping bag to thaw out for an hour or so before I can warm my hands up enough to get out of there and then start trying to heat up some snow to be able to add to my dehydrated food for my meal that night. And I've got to fit a page in there. So while I'm warming up, I'm inside my sleeping bag, zipped right up to the top, still got most of my clothes on, and I'm inside this sleeping bag, and I've got my pen and my paper or my pencil and my paper and my headlamp on, and I start writing. And, you know, more often than not, I would just fall asleep. And there was this one day where I just had a line from one side of the page through to the other, and I looked at it and I thought, shit, that'll do. That explains everything about what I went through. when I got to Canada, when I finally made it off the ice and I got to Canada and I caught up with my land crew that were there that were going to look after me from Canada and then all the way down through the United States with the support vehicles and all the rest of it, that was when it was time for them to take my notes, type them up, and send them back to the publishers. When they come across that page, they asked me about it, and I said, just send it as it is, you know, that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And a publisher sent a message back saying, not good enough, rewrite that day. So they didn't get it. But anyway, there was a lot of emotion in that one squiggle across the page, let me tell you.
I think it perfectly summarizes it up. How much energy did you have that day? Line.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And you know, and everybody that runs, like I say, whether they run a half marathon, a marathon or beyond or an ultra, we all know what it's like to absolutely be so completely physically exhausted.
Oh yeah.
But I think Joe Record summed it up. Joe was one of the runners from Western Australia that used to compete in the Sydney to Melbourne races in the early days and one of the pioneers of ultra running here in Australia, he and Tony Raffney and a few of the others. He was doing the Sydney to Melbourne race one day and somebody said to him, one of the reporters said to him, was interviewing him on the road down there, not far from the Dandenong Ranges. They said, Joe, what's the matter? He said, I hurt. And they said, of course you hurt. What hurts the most? And he said, my head hurts. And they expected him to say, oh, my feet hurts or my hip hurts or my arms hurt or this hurts or that hurts or whatever. He said, my head hurts. And it summed it up perfectly because for runners, they get that. And what it means is that you are concentrating so hard on trying to block out the pain that you're going through by putting your mind into a different place, a different part of your life, and take you have this out-of-body experience away from the road that you're on, that you are concentrating so hard on that that you're starting to get headaches.
Yeah.
And that's what Joe was going through at that point in time, and I can relate to that, and most runners can.
And it's just that constant, like, unrelenting effort, mental effort that takes.
It sure is. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is when we keep coming back.
Yeah.
We keep coming back, and it's a bit like a woman having given birth to a child. It's the greatest thing on earth that anybody could ever do, bring a life into this world. And yet you'll see, you know, your wives or, you know, you see different people go through so much pain to try and bear this child. And yet Yeah, the reward is there.
Mm.
And then after it, you forget about the pain. And one of the gifts that human beings have is a bad memory for pain.
Yeah.
And so that's why we keep going back again. We keep on doing it and we keep overcoming it and our pain threshold grows and we become stronger and we become better.
You grow, you become stronger, and there's a sense of satisfaction. And I think a quote that I like is you can't achieve anything without the possibility of failure. Yes. And so pretty much everything you've attempted in your running journey has been a strong possibility of failure, because everything you've attempted has been so hard. So that gives you that sense of achievement. And I'm starting to think, because people always ask me, like, why do I run ultra marathons? Doesn't it just hurt? And I say, well, yeah, it hurts. And I kind of struggle to answer that question, but I think it is that sense of there's a task that's quite difficult, and to overcome that difficult task by whatever means, there's that sense of satisfaction that you draw from that is huge.
Yeah.
And then that helps you grow as a runner, but grow as a person, and your whole life kind of ends up mirroring that. And just to have a big challenge, get past that. And that's what you keep doing. And you do that for yourself and you do that for charities.
Well, this is why, you have to have a cause bigger than yourself to push your body to hurt and to push through that hurt.
Yeah.
And when you can see somebody else is in pain, then it's amazing how you can overcome the pain within yourself.
Yeah, something else bigger than you. That's 100%.
I'll never forget, like, my son gave me this motivational tape one time, and there was a line on there that said, whenever two people get into a fight, it's the guy that's not afraid of dying that is going to live every time, you know. And, and it's almost like you're not afraid of the pain. You're not afraid of overcoming that threshold. And so some people spend all of their running career or all their athletic career trying to avoid the hurt, the discomfort, and the this and the that. And I remember Tony Rafferty saying to me a long time ago, he said, Pat, he was a bit of a mentor for me, and he said, Pat, you know, he said, pain is normal and natural in these events. You have to accept it as part of the event and push on and on and on. And I've never forgotten that, because it's so simplistic, but it's so true. Once you accept these things, then you can live with it and you can move on. But when you're all the time trying to fight against it and trying, you know, like if you're out there running on the road and it starts raining, and you get underneath shelter and you're going, oh, you know, I'll wait for it to stop or whatever. Well, you end up not doing anything. If you just go, yeah, well, it's raining and I'm here, but I'm just going to keep on running, and you're just going to run through it. Mm. And we've all done that. Then you just get on with the job and you accept it. Yeah. You accept that you're going to be wet and it's going to be raining. Same with the heat, same with the wind, same with everything. It's
power of mindset, right?
Absolutely it is. But it's about also having a goal to aim towards and letting nothing get in the way.
Yeah, that's right. If it rains, you make friends with the rain.
Exactly. Yeah. Once again, Tony said to me, he said, you know, when you run, if the wind's blowing in your face, imagine the wind blowing right through you and coming out the other side. Take your mind to that point in time.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, it's amazing how you can cope with it, how you can cope with it, and you just push on, and it doesn't tend to be the problem. The mind's an amazing thing, and if you can get your mind and your body in sync, you're unbreakable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I cannot overstate that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge. And you know what? For someone attempting their first ever 10K run, that's relevant. It's relevant for someone who's trying to run for 10 months straight.
Absolutely. It's for somebody, you know, somebody's been hurt in an accident at work and they're trying to get back on their feet and get back into the workforce. For somebody that's been, you know, stuck in a wheelchair and they've got the chance to walk again, you know, it's those first steps. It's all epic. Every single thing, human endurance is epic.
Yeah.
And we need to identify it for what it is and love that moment. It's hard, it's difficult, but it's inspirational and it's amazing. And never is it shown greater than through these runs, whether they be fun runs or, like I said, marathons or ultras.
Something that challenges you.
On a daily basis,
something that rings you out.
And I'll tell you, the other thing I love about running too is that you can go in an event as a parent and your kids can go in the same event. And your wife can go on the same event, or, you know, your boyfriend or your husband, or, you know, everybody can compete together.
Yeah.
But if you're playing a game of footy, it's like the under 30s or the under 17s or the under 14s or it's this age or that age. So everybody's categorized.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about just the running fraternity. It's like you don't go, oh, you're a woman, you can't run with me, or I'm a guy, I can't run with you, or you're a kid, you can't run with us. It's like, let's go out and have a run, let's have a run together.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, like parkrun's a good example of that, right?
So parkrun's sensational. I mean, it's the glue of the community.
It really is now. So I, the fact that I can turn up and do an event and there's a bloke and his dog, there's a dude who is 70 years old, and a man in a wheelchair, and there's a 10-year-old girl.
Yeah.
All in the same, and everyone high fives at the end.
Yeah.
And everyone's equal.
We're all there together, yeah.
No one cares how fast.
Everybody's feeding off each other.
No one cares how fast you run. Everyone's there clapping the person in the wheelchair coming last. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. It's such a simple concept, but sometimes the best things in this life are the simplest things in life. And, you know, and I remember I started off parkrun at St. Peter's. And the catch cry was, it's not the Olympics, everybody. It's not the Olympics, you know. Yeah. And I never forgot that. They used to yell that out every time at the start of the events. And the numbers grew because, you're right, it's not the Olympics. It's about doing your own personal best and just getting out there and enjoying it. So some people do it because they want to lose weight. Some people do it because they want to get off the couch. Some people do it because they want to see if they can do 5 kilometres. And other people that do 50 kilometres want to do it because they just want to be around that fraternity and it helps them get their speed up as well. So, you know, it's something for everybody in the simplistic of just a 5K run.
Yeah, and I know that tomorrow I'm going to go and do a park run. I'm not going to do it fast. I'm not going to compete because I have a race the following day. But I'm going to do park run anyway. I'm going to go there and I'm going to participate. I'm going to jog. I'm going to high five people just because I actually just love it. It's fantastic. Even just witnessing other people running and pushing themselves is huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, it's good. And that's where I first bumped into you 2-3 months ago, I think. You were running with Claire. And Claire is the guest that we had on the podcast maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks ago. Claire is running her first marathon, raising money for the Love Mercy Foundation.
Which is fantastic because, you know, Claire and I had a great discussion I met Claire a little while before that and she said, you know, I want to do something. I want to raise money for a worthwhile cause. I said, you should have a look at these guys. You know, they're a fantastic organization. The Love Mercy Foundation provides seed loans. So 30 kilos of seeds for the women in the villages in Uganda. And then they train them how to harvest those seeds. And they end up being able to send their kids through schooling, getting an education as a result of it. They're able to put food on the table. They're learning new skills. They're able to use these seeds as barter to be able to buy clothes and put a roof over their heads. And it's just a fantastic system.
Yeah.
Once again, very simplistic, but works incredibly well. And Claire was so taken up by it and also by the opportunity to be able to push yourself to the extent to be able to do a run for somebody like
that. And I'm following Claire on social media now, and I know that she is using that as motivation herself because she's running for something bigger than herself.
Exactly.
And that's her pushing herself to her first marathon. So it's incredible to see that. Now, you've actually started – well, not started. I guess you're doing an event that you've run in the past, Quicksand.
Quicksand's my brainchild. And basically it came out of the fact that it's so hard to organise runs on the road these days. You know, I cut my teeth on the old Sydney to Melbourne races, but it is almost impossible to get a race like that on again because it's a matter of shutting down roads and having the SES on board and the police on board. And
Coast to Cozzy.
It just got shut down for the same reason.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's logistics, it's road safety.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it drives you crazy. And so until we become the numbers and we have as loud a voice as the motorists, it's always going to be that way. So, look, in the meantime, I decided, well, how can I organise races and take them out away from all of that? Plus, I love to run trails myself anyway. Yeah. So I decided I would kick off this event called Quicksand, and I'd run it on Maroubra Beach.
Yeah.
And so I held this event 2 years ago, and it was a big success.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got busy with the run across India in between that and now. So I ran from Kanyakumari, the southernmost point of India, to up into near the Himalayan mountains, up into the northernmost point of India.
That's another story.
And that was for women's education. Yeah. So that's a long story on its own.
Yeah.
But then I've come back to, I'm back here in Australia, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'd love to get that run going again. So it's called Quicksand Australia. There's a 5K run, a 10K run, a half marathon, and a marathon, plus a marathon teams. And so with the marathon teams, you get your friends together, and there's four runners in a team, and each runner must do a minimum distance of 10 kilometres.
All on soft sand.
And it is all on soft sand, and it's difficult, and it's hard work, and it's not glamorous. But you know what? It's a serious workout, and there's prizes there. We've got Toyota as one of the sponsors, the major sponsors for the marathon, Sydney City Toyota, and a number of other sponsors. A Gillian Chocolates are going to sponsor the 5K event.
That's what sold me.
The Gillian Chocolates. Yeah.
So are you doing part of this? Is raising money for Love Mercy too?
Well, all of the money is going to the Love Mercy Foundation, and so my goal, I want to raise $100,000 for the Love Mercy Foundation. So between this and another run that I will actually do in Uganda with Steve Monaghetti, so between the two of us, we'll raise this $100,000 between these two events. And the goal is to make a huge difference to these women, but also to encourage fellow runners to get out there and have a crack at something different.
Do something tough.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, there's like nothing harder than doing a marathon in soft sand. If you think you can do it under 3 hours, you're kidding yourself, you know. In fact, there's one guy who's going for trying to do a world record.
World record for marathon on sand.
A world record for a marathon on soft sand.
Do you know what the world record is?
Well, he's got to get that. Well, there's not a world record at the moment.
Right?
So there's the big kicker for him.
Okay.
Because he contacted Guinness Book of Records.
Yeah.
And he got back to me. He said, Pat, do you know that there's not a world record for running a marathon on soft sand?
Right.
He said, I'm going to set one.
Okay.
And I said, well, it better be a fair dinkum one, Ali.
Yeah.
So Ali's from the from Cronulla Running Fraternity down there on Wanda Beach.
Okay.
And he's a very good runner. He won my 10K in the soft sand last time.
Yeah.
But he's stepping up to the marathon.
Okay, there you go.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he cracks around 2.5 hours.
On sand?
On soft sand. He's a seriously strong runner.
Fair dinkum. Yeah, right. That'd be good. So it's the end of September.
28th of September, kicks off at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, Maroubra Beach. We've got LED Lenser are going to provide headlamps for those running on into the evening, so the marathon runners, half marathon runners, and the teams marathon. And the 5K and 10K will start before those events kick off.
Yeah.
There's prize money for some of the categories. There is prizes. There's random prizes. Hillbrick Bikes are giving away a bike. Hillbrick Racing Bikes are giving away a bike and some clothing. The Runner Shop here in Clovelly Road are giving away running clothing and shoes and bits and pieces as well. So there'll be plenty of prizes to go around, and everybody gets a medal that finishes.
Yeah.
And, at the end of the day, it's a tough gig, but they'll enjoy it.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it because it is tough. It is sand. It's something that's different. It doesn't
All want a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And I think knowing that you're getting that challenge, something a little bit different, plus the proceeds are going to
a worthwhile cause,
charity in Uganda.
And Eloise Wellings, one of our Olympic athletes, is going to be down there because she's really pushing the charity.
Yeah.
It was part of her brainchild here in Australia.
She started the charity, didn't she?
Yeah, so Eloise will be down there at the race. So, you'll get to meet Olympians as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a good day. I'm looking forward to being there, actually. So if anyone is listening in Sydney, please get around it. It's 28th of September.
Yeah, or
Quicksand Australia. Anyway,
just go to the website, quicksandaustralia.com.
.com.au?
No, AU. Just quicksandaustralia.com.
There you go. So it's going to be a great event. I seriously recommend everyone should try and get their hands on Pat's book, Pole to Pole. It's a good read.
Thank you.
That you trying to describe going through the Darien Gap in the middle of Central America.
I had 19 armed soldiers take me through there. And
you just tell us about that?
I'm just going to talk about that bit because there was this book that I read a year before I took this event on, and it was about these two British backpackers that were sitting around in a pub in Panama, and they decided this one night when they'd had too much to drink that they were going to go through the Darien jungle. and they went into there, and then they got taken as hostage because in the jungle there is a lot of the drug runners trying to bring drugs up from South America to Central America and on up into the States. There's people there that will take you as hostage, no problems whatsoever, because, you know, they're poverty stricken, and they see anybody's got a pair of shoes as being somebody who's wealthy.
Yeah.
These guys got taken, and they were held for over a year and moved from camp to camp while authorities were trying to locate them and find them, and their families had given up on them. And in the end, they escaped and they got out of there. So that was a book I read just a year before I found myself in the Darien jungle as well.
Wow. So did that make you nervous?
Absolutely. It was amazing. But I learned a lot through that book about what I was going to encounter. And luckily, by that stage, by the time I'd come from the North Pole down through Canada, the United States of America, Mexico, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Costa Rica, El Salvador, and Panama, by that stage, I'd created quite a ripple effect in the running community worldwide.
Yeah.
I was doing this for the International Red Cross for their clean water projects.
Yeah.
And so I was highly respected by the governments throughout the whole of the Americas. Yeah. And so they sent a combined forces group to come and take me through there. And there was 19 armed soldiers that were combined between the Colombian government and the Panamanian government, and they were specialized commando soldiers. And we went through there, and there was many stages where we were cutting our way through there through the jungle with machetes, because we couldn't go out into the open, because if we went out into the open, we were sitting ducks. So we had to create trails through there. It was quite an adventure.
How long did it take you to get through the Darien Gap?
Well, it was 5 days from Panama to Turbo in Colombia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was quite an amazing thing. Yeah.
And
I feel gifted to be able to have done that.
And come out the other side.
Yeah, and to survive it. Yeah, absolutely.
So that was what, like 5-6 months into your journey, was it? From the north to the south pole.
Around 6 months. Yeah, 6 months into it. The whole journey took 10 months and 13 days.
Yeah.
I started on the 4th of April, in 2011.
Yeah.
I was over in New York training Dragon Tires around Central Park, New York, in January of in December 2010 and January 2011.
Quite cold in New York.
And at that time of the year, it was snowed in, and they had huge snowfalls.
Yeah.
And so I was staying up in Harlem, and I would drag these tires with my harness from where I was in Harlem down to Central Park, and then do laps of Central Park, New York, and then come dragging back up.
A few funny looks. I mean,
the thing about New York is everybody fits in.
I was going to say.
Incredible. If you're going to do anything crazy, that's the place to do it, because everybody just goes, after a while, you know, the taxi drivers used to let people out to take photographs of me. They go, there's that crazy Aussie. Look, there's Skippy over there.
Yeah.
And even the local police would often come out, and they'd, you know, run around with me. And
so you almost got a bit of a name for yourself. How long did you do that for?
I was there for a month, six weeks actually.
Yeah.
6 weeks training in the snow, because as you can imagine, coming from an Australian summer and then going over there.
Yeah.
Completely different. Yeah, I had to acclimatise.
You're going to run in the Arctic Circle and Antarctica.
Yeah.
So you got to get used to pulling a sled, right? So
I went to there, and then from there we flew. From there, my crew went and got the camper vans. And I flew on up to a place called Longyearbyen, which is one of the Norwegian islands that you fly from there. The Russians then fly you from there into the North Pole.
Yeah.
And there's this group headed up by Viktor Boyashki, who's a Russian scientist and an adventurer. And he organises the flights into the North Pole region. So you fly into this airstrip that they've created on the ice up there, which is 2 degrees out from there, so about 200 kilometres out from the North Pole.
Yeah.
And then you're helicoptered from there up into the actual North Pole. And then you drag your sled from there out all the way wherever you're going, Greenland, Canada, Alaska, Russia, whatever.
Far out.
And I was up there the same time as Prince Harry. Prince Harry was up there, because he was up there.
Did you give him a high five?
Yeah, I saw Prince Harry. It was amazing, because in Norway, he was just like, anybody else, you know, because they've got their own royalty and all the rest of it. So they didn't, you know, he was just treated like a normal person. Yeah, he had his security around him, but you wouldn't know. They're just plain clothes guys. And but he was up there to promote, of course, the Invictus soldiers, and then later on what became the Invictus Games. And it was all about recognition for these soldiers that had lost limbs and sacrifice, but were on the mend to be able to rebuild their lives through doing some adventure. Yeah. And so they were doing 2 degrees from 2 degrees out, so from where that plane dropped me off or came in.
So 2 degrees
from
there, latitude.
So they were working into the North Pole.
Yeah.
So they had to drag sleds about 200 k's in.
Yeah.
And Harry did 1 degree, did about 100 k. And then he is, because of the season was so late and the weather conditions were so bad, he had to fly back for William's wedding. So it was the same time. So it was all, you know, all of this is happening at the same time as I'm already in the North Pole and I'm coming back out the opposite way. It's interesting.
So I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the listeners right now, and the first thing I think of is 10 months, 13 days. How many pairs of shoes did you go through?
14 pairs of shoes.
Is that all?
Yeah, 14 pairs of shoes.
Far out.
You know, I've always said that you should get around about 2,000 k's out of a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And then you'll notice after a while the EVA material on the side is showing wrinkles, and that means that it's lost its memory. It's not bouncing back to
it's
the way
it was. It's not
springing
back.
Yeah, exactly. 14. So that's when you know that it's sort of lost its shock absorption qualities and it's time to change them. So, 14 pairs of shoes. So, and they're all running. I always do 100 Ks in a pair of shoes, then put them back in the box and keep them for a race.
Yeah.
It's most important, because we bring out into this country 10,000 pairs of each brand, each type of each brand of shoes, and yet they have to fit so many different people, even though, you know, you might be a 9.5 and I'm a 9.5, but we have different running styles and different weights and all the rest of it. So what happens is the shoes are actually made to mold into your foot these days, and they do great jobs with it. So, you know, all of the major shoe companies have got wonderful shoes out there, and, you know. Yeah, so
I was expecting you to say something like 30 or so pairs of shoes.
You would think so, but it's not. I mean, you know, they're like race tires.
I guess, and you weren't exactly setting the world alight with your pace, I'd imagine. You're probably just trundling along.
Yeah, although even if you were running it faster, it wouldn't matter so much. What happens, what a lot of your listeners would know, is a lot of people that run slower, they tend to drag their feet when they're tired.
Yes.
And when they're dragging their feet, of course, they'll often wear the heels out, so they'll pronate or supinate a little bit by dragging their feet, and they'll or through dragging their feet, and they'll wear their shoes out much faster. So the people that are running more towards their ball of their foot, more towards their toes, and bounce a little bit, they actually don't, you know, they're not wearing their shoes out that fast.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
What did you eat? How did you feel? How did you eat?
On that run, I ate everything I could get my hands on. Everything. Honestly, I just simply couldn't get enough calories into me. But when I was in the North Pole, you know, I drank copious amounts of olive oil. Because
drank olive oil.
Yeah, because olive oil is high in fat content, but it doesn't freeze as easily as most liquids. And so consequently, you could put it into a thermos and you could drink this stuff, and it was okay. We'd boil up snow at the end of the day. When I say we, I'd say my guide, Eric Phillips, and my cameraman. Mm. And we'd boil up, you know, some snow, and so you'd have that liquid, and then you'd add that to your dehydrated food.
Mm.
And, you know, I normally only weigh 65 kilos, but when I got off the ice in Canada, I weighed 49 kilos.
49 kilos.
I was just skin and bones, absolutely just skin and bones. My sled weighed 100 kilos, so I had 100 kilos worth of tent, sleeping bags, extra gear, clothing, my boots, ice axes,
and
a shovel in there.
Heaps of olive oil.
Yeah, and lots of olive oil. Lots of olive oil.
Personally, my own weight has been quite stable for the last 5, 6, 7 years, and I'm doing a lot of training at the moment. I've lost 3 or 4 kilos in the last few weeks, and I've noticed a big change in myself having lost 3 or 4 kilos.
Yeah, you're
talking that you've lost 15 plus kilos. That's
but there's a tipping point too where it's not healthy.
Advantageous.
And I find if I'm 61 kilos, I'm fast.
Yeah.
If I'm up around 65 kilos, I'm slow.
Yeah.
And if I'm 59 kilos, I just exhausted too easy. Weak. Yeah.
So it's this fine line, right?
Yeah. And everybody has got that niche that they need to hit. Yeah. And when you get that to that point, that's where your body just feels comfortable at that weight.
And it's been a real learning curve for me. I've just having drops that 3 to 4 kilos, I just set a PB in over 10K recently. And I think because I'm carrying 4 kilograms less, it's kind of interesting. But how'd you put the weight back on? Did you put it back on as you got through Canada?
Well, anybody that's been to America knows there's no shortage. There's no shortage of hamburgers, pizzas, 7-Elevens.
Yeah.
You know, there's not too many 7-Elevens in the North Pole.
Yeah.
And there's not even too many of them up in Northern Canada. But once you hit the States, hard to put calories on.
So you're just eating calories, whatever you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. I come across a black bear when I was up in Canada, and I wasn't sure if I was going to eat him or he was going to eat me.
Yeah.
It was a bit like that. We're both pretty gnarly. Yeah.
Far out, fitting. Well, I feel like I can talk to you for about 10 hours, but I'm not going to. We've heard about a few of your runs. We've heard about your fundraising for charities, which is cool, and Quicksand, which is coming up, and that's pretty exciting. So I'm going to be there.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to know more, look, they can go to patfarmer.com. That's my website. And there's a lot more, and there's a bit of film footage and photos and that from other events and runs that I've done. So they can easily download some stuff there, and they can get in contact with me through there if they want to know anything about any questions about this podcast or running as well. But also, of course, the Quicksand Run for Love Mercy Foundation.
That's right.
Quicksandaustralia.com.
And other than that, I might bump into you at a park run or something.
Absolutely. You'll definitely see me at park run, Centennial Park. My wife runs it, Tanya.
Yeah, she does. Centennial. I might go to Centennial tomorrow morning, I think.
Yeah.
Love it. Thanks for chatting, Pat. It's really a really big pleasure of mine to have you on. And I'll see you at Quicksand, I reckon.
Mate, absolute pleasure. And anybody needs any physiotherapy, get down to the running room.
Well, they all know about me. All right, cheers.
Cheers.